Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Now more than ever, Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowest price guarantee.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
True crime today.
This is the ongoing story of a small Idaho town and its residents. A tightly knit community that hasn't seen a murder since 2015. An environment where one thought they could feel safe and secure. Until a quadruple homicide stole the lives of four young souls on a mid-November evening, leaving far more questions than answers. Where will the investigation lead, and how do we get there? This is the University of Idaho Murders podcast. Four killed, for what?
Welcome to the podcast. My name is Tony Bruschi. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts just to not miss any episodes or breaking updates as we get them. You can follow me on Twitter at Tony B Pod for more on the case and updates off the air. Today, we're going to be talking with former FBI special agent Bobby Chacone to get his insight on the case and the current developments. We'll be talking with him in just a few moments. But first, I wanted to go to some audio that came out recently online, I believe, from Chicago's Channel 7. It's a former student of Brian Koberger talking about what it was like to have Brian as an instructor in class prior to the homicides taking place, and what it was like having Brian as an instructor after the homicides took place. Obviously, no one in the class knew that Brian was the alleged killer at that moment in time. But it is interesting to note the change in demeanor that several have been talking about. Prior to the November killings, here's what they had to say.
He was pretty strict as far as grading goes. When he came into class, he was very, not super mentally present. He would stand up at the front, look at the ground. He had a lot of like boilerplate responses he would give people rather than, you know, maybe something he had thought up on the spot. It seemed like he would be, you know, he'd come in knowing what he was going to say to like most interactions. And then when he would grade your papers, he would be grading you on what he ended up calling like a higher standard. But what it really felt like to us was he was grading us like he would have graded himself as a PhD student. And so that was just kind of like, you know, we were all annoyed by him. And so I knew his name, you know, I knew like, oh, T.A. Brian, like he sucks at this. Like he's grading us too harshly. And that was like an annoyance. But obviously beyond that, we just thought he was a little weird and kind of, you know, a bad grader.
A very honest response right there. And it also kind of begins to help us paint the picture of his personality and the level, I guess you could say, of narcissism to a certain extent or a lack of understanding that these students were not at his same level of education, yet he was more so running everything through the prism of his eyes and his mind and his level of knowledge. Just an interesting observation when you try and understand the mind of someone like this. Here's what that student had to say when he began to realize that his teacher was allegedly a murderer.
You know, I look on my phone and I see the guy's name and I see the picture. And I'm thinking, that looks a lot like my TA who's also named Brian, but that would be crazy. And so I went and I checked my email. you know, to see the emails I'd had with him and the name match and everything. And yeah, it was just like totally jarring, totally shocking to realize that this person that had been, you know, kind of grading my papers was, you know, allegedly this like horrible murderer.
Can you imagine that? Can you imagine having an instructor in college and you know that this crime recently took place very close to where you're at and everyone's looking for this guy, and then 7 weeks later you find that out? Oh my God, this was that guy. When asked about what changed in his demeanor after the murders, and keep in mind, no one suspected him. No one knew anything about him being involved in any way, shape, or form. But his demeanor did seem to change after that date.
Yeah. We just, it would have been about a month before winter break when like the murders happened. And we didn't obviously build our framework for this around that because we had no reason to connect him to that, you know, at the time. But definitely around then, he started grading everybody just a hundreds, not like you pretty much, if you turned something in, you were getting high marks and he stopped leaving notes. It was just, you know, he seemed preoccupied is what I would have said at the time. And now obviously he seems like he was probably pretty preoccupied, but it was, yeah, it was much easier. You'd turn in whatever you wanted pretty much. And he was just grading them up and sending them back. Like,
but that wasn't it though. There's more to his personality that changed other than just seeming to not really care about the grading system anymore.
He probably, that I saw, he was always a little bit spotty on whether or not he'd come to class because he had, you know, whatever PhD stuff over the top of it. But the couple times that he did come after or around that time period, I remember him, you know, he had like a little bit more facial hair, just like stubble, but definitely less like well-kept than he was. And he was a little quieter. You know, he used to stand up at the start of class and like talk about some stuff sometimes. And this time he didn't really do that at all. He was definitely, I think, like the previous like mental preoccupation that we had been noticing where it was like, you know, he didn't really want to be there. That was at like an all-time high. And he just, you know, didn't look like he was doing great.
Almost kind of mentally checked out in a way, it sounds like. Interesting audio from one of his students. I'm sure we'll probably be hearing more of that in the coming days. This afternoon, as we're recording this, we're seeing images coming out of Moscow, Idaho, of the crime scene itself on King Road. Two mattresses being loaded in the back of two pickup trucks and being taken off the scene. We don't know whose mattresses those were. They appear to be in mattress bags, so really couldn't tell anything from, you know, as far as what the condition is or what they look like. For all we know, it could have simply honestly been the mattresses of the two other roommates who did not have anything happen in their rooms, maybe just removing belongings. But that's what we're seeing this afternoon. Let's go to our conversation and our guest today. This is a very interesting man who has lived quite an amazing life and had quite an amazing career with the FBI. Bobby Chacon is joining us. And Bobby, I want to start here with the investigation now entering a new beginning. The suspect obviously in custody. As a former FBI agent, what now changes, if anything, from an investigation standpoint with the FBI?
Well, once charges are lodged, I mean, like physically, there's an actual change in it. Like, so what we used to do is at this point in the investigation, you literally box up a lot of stuff and you move over to the prosecutor's office. And they usually have what we would call a war room, you know, a big conference room where they have a big whiteboard and, you know, boxes and boxes of evidence and all the statements and stuff. So you literally start moving the investigation from the police department or the FBI office over to the prosecutor's office, because now the charges are lodged, it's all about the charges. It's all about the court. It's all about a speedy trial motion, because defendants have the right to be brought to trial in a speedy fashion. So that's a constitutional right. So there's a timeline. Everything is a time limit now. Where beforehand, before somebody's arrested, you know, you can take your time, you can do things at a certain pace. But now that charges are lodged, now there's going to be a court schedule, there's going to be hearings. And for each hearing, you have to have, you know, whatever that hearing is going to entail, witnesses or statements or lab exams and things like that. So physically, you move, part of the operation moves over to the courthouse or the prosecutor's office, wherever that be. And you literally start okay, what's our next court date? And what do we need for that? And so as this thing moves forward, you have a team that's probably showing up every day, working hand in hand with the prosecutors, while also at the same time, you still have investigators out in the field running down leads that are still coming in, doing interviews or re-interviewing people that may be needed for, you know, the next phase, the next hearing, whatever it be. So literally, there's a lot going on in the investigation. Physically, it moves. And then so the mindset moves. The mindset is now, okay, when's our next hearing? What are we obligated to bring to court for that hearing to be, you know, to prevail?
Obviously, charges, there was enough to bring charges against him. What sort of things are they still looking for? What sort of questions are being asked out there as those deadlines begin to approach? As court comes closer?
Well, I've heard a lot of talk about the weapon, right? They haven't had the weapon. So I'm sure there are still leads about where the weapon is. Look, they don't really need the weapon to go, obviously, to go forward with charges. They didn't. They were comfortable with it. You don't always need the murder weapons, particularly if it's a knife. Sure, it's nice to have, great piece of evidence. But a prosecution can certainly move forward without it. So what they're looking for now is motive evidence, because even though motive is not necessarily required by a statute, motive was always the why of it was always the least important thing as an investigator to me.
Sure.
Unless it had value of where to look for the how, you know, who, what, when, where, and how. And because motive is normally not required by a statute, I don't have to prove why you murdered somebody. If I have you on video murdering somebody, that's proof enough, right?
Sure.
So, but a jury and prosecutors, they want to hear a story, and prosecutors want to tell the jury that story of why, because everybody wants to know the why. And so they're probably looking at, you know, I'm sure before he was arrested, they had a list of people in his life that they wanted to talk to, family members, siblings, friends, you know, students that he worked, we went to school with. He was a teacher's assistant, so students that were in his class that he taught. So there was probably a long list that they had established before he was arrested that they couldn't go to because they didn't want to, you know, have him know that they were after him. But now that list is, now they're probably working down that list, going, interviewing everybody in his life, doing a deep dive in his life to go into the why and the motive of it. They're still doing, you know, follow-up investigations that they were doing before, but the phase now that they're in is now that we know who he is. And since last week when he was placed under arrest, I'm sure everybody that was close to him in his life has gotten a telephone call, an email, or a visit from somebody in the investigative team looking to interview them.
And that's a very interesting point. Obviously, there's a lot of connecting the dots going on here of trying to figure out what brought the connection between him and the victims. And that's apparently there is some connection there. I know Mr. Gonsalves had said yesterday that there is, but he wasn't ready to speak about it. If you were to speculate on that, and it's just pure speculation because we don't know right now, what kind of connection do you think there might be between these two individuals, not between two individuals, but between him and those four individuals whose lives were taken?
You know, again, like you said, this is going to be speculation. Yeah. On my part, I don't know, but I would anticipate that he went through, as clinical as it might sound, a target selection.
Uh-huh.
So if he wanted to carry out this killing for the sake of carrying out a killing, which I think this was, because I don't think he had, you know, I don't think he was spurned by any of these girls. Like, you know, I don't think he was an ex-boyfriend, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think that he went through a process of selection, and probably it had to do with both the people and the location. So he might have looked at the house and said, this might be a good place to get in and out of. It's a party house. Lots of people always coming and going. So he might, you know, be able to, you know, go under the cover of that. And so I think that, and then, you know, I think he did have, you know, some built up rage against women. Like, I've seen a lot of interviews with, I saw one female classmate who said he was a heroin user in high school, which, you know, is very unusual. It's not a real high school drug, yeah, that we often see.
Yeah.
I've seen some former classmates, and I've seen some former students of his. I haven't seen any previous girlfriends. I haven't seen any previous, you know, women or anybody that he's been in relationships with, like, mm-hmm, either romantically or socially. And that might indicate, now I just might not have seen them,
yeah,
but if they don't exist, it might indicate that he was kind of a loner. You know, we've heard the term incel, which,
yeah,
stands for involuntarily celibate, which is basically, you know, guys who can't they can't establish normal relationships with romantic partners, and mainly females. And then they build up this rage and this, and, you know, they feel emasculated. And then, you know, there's even groups online that get together and commiserate.
Sure.
Often sometimes these guys are loners.
I've been one of the first people to say incel since the beginning on this. And again, not necessarily involved in the groups, but more so just kind of the mindset of blaming women for their own lack of luck in romantic relationships, rather than introspectively looking at oneself and saying, maybe it's me, more so just blaming everyone else. That's what I was wondering when it comes to this, because obviously he had such a fascination with criminology. That's what he was going for in his studies. Was this, in your opinion, more for sport or a combination of trying to see what it's like to commit a crime like this, almost as a weird education project on his part, as strange as that sounds, in combination with that rage and that anger that he may have towards women symbolically by going after these specific people?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I tend to think that he was on this path, this life path of being a sociopath, of being a killer, regardless of what education he was pursuing.
Yeah.
And I think that came first. I think the sociopathy came first.
Okay.
Because that's formed in our, you know, teen years, our formative years, you know, junior high school era, usually. And something clicks in that. And so, yes, maybe he sought out the education. But I don't think the education came first. In other words, I don't think he was studying this and said, oh, I think I could pull off the perfect crime. I don't think that's it. I think this guy was evil. He was a sociopath, you know, from earlier in his life. We'll know more, hopefully, about, you know, like we just talked about, his relationships in his life, and things like that and stuff. So I think that, you know, maybe he did, you know, but like I said on a TV show yesterday, and got a lot of caused quite a stir. I said if he went to school to become a master criminal, he should get his tuition money back, because he certainly did not learn a lot. But I mean, people are conflating, you know, getting your degree in criminal justice with being a criminal mastermind. Look, that's not what they teach you. They teach you how to solve crime, not to commit crime. And I know people like conflate those things and say, well, if you know how to solve a crime, then you probably know how to get away with a crime. And that's not true. I mean, I've been investigating for 30 years on many different levels. And I can't tell you that I could go out tomorrow and commit the perfect crime.
Yeah.
It's just not, that's not what you're learning in that, in school.
Sure. I mean, the speculation is almost like he reverse engineered it to fit his needs. The arrest affidavit cites that there was a small amount of DNA found in that knife sheath. Is it possible or even likely that there is more DNA that was found on the scene and is being held back until the trial begins?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's likely there's a lot more evidence held back, right? Because the affidavit only had to satisfy the probable cause standard, not the standard at trial, which is beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, when a prosecutor goes forward with charges, like I said earlier, because of speedy trial rules and things, they usually have enough, they feel comfortable that they can win at trial from day one of charges. I think that's most prosecutors I know, because, you know, they don't like say, okay, let's file charges and hope we get the smoking gun later, because, you know, you have to be able to produce fairly quickly. And so, you know, evidence and proof. And so I think they have a lot more. I don't know if they have a lot more DNA at the scene. They might. I'd hope that they would. I've said all along, they had three things. They had, you know, they had his blood at the scene in one of those killing rooms. I also said they probably had an eyewitness of him leaving the house. And I said this last week on numerous things. In fact, I posted a video of me saying that, because certainly, you know, I think a lot of people were taken by surprise that they had a witness. But I knew from the beginning they probably had a witness. And then they had location data through the cell phones, through the great analysis of the cell phone. So I said at the very minimum, they have those three things before they went forward with charges. Now, what else do they have? I think they have more DNA. I think they have more motive evidence that they probably didn't need or want to put into the affidavit. They probably know a little bit more about his movements in the weeks and days leading up to the murders. Mm-hmm. And I think they have some people in his life that are telling them things about his attitudes towards women, towards relationships, and maybe towards killing.
Yeah. And let's talk about you just mentioned the witness that we learned about in the affidavit yesterday. There's been a lot of talk online about that roommate who saw the masked man walking out of the house that night, and many people criticizing her for not calling police. Can you speak with your experience as to the state of mind that she was likely in at that time to help others better understand why things did in fact play out the way that they did?
Well, Tony, I can only guess at that. I think she could have fainted out of fear. You hear it, you actually can read, when I read the affidavit, I could actually almost palpably feel her fear.
Yeah.
As he's walking by her. There's a lot of questions about that. A lot of us have a lot of questions about that. I really pray for that young woman. Mm-hmm. I think she's going to need a lot of help getting through this kind of traumatic incident. I just hope that the internet doesn't feel like it has to destroy this woman's life.
Yeah.
She's been through a lot. I don't want to get too far into her actions without knowing more about what happened, but I'm certainly putting no blame on her.
No.
I think, and I hope that the medical examiner, if they testify at trial, will say that no ambulance in the world could have got there quick enough to save any of these lives.
Yeah.
I hope that's the case. And I hope for her that's the case. And I hope that, people look at her with somewhat of a sympathetic lens because, look, none of us, I have certainly never been in her shoes, and very few people have, and I don't want to pass judgment on someone in that situation, So I there are some questions about why it took so long, but I had those questions from the beginning.
Sure.
That we knew something happened around the 4 or 5 a.m. area. This is from the very beginning, but we also knew that the call didn't come in until just before noon. There will be questions. I'm sure the investigators know, and they've talked to her. I hope she's getting the help that she's going to need to get through, such a traumatic event in her life.
Yeah, I completely agree. It feels like exactly like you just said. None of us, hopefully none of us, have had a situation like that in our lives where it's easy to Monday morning quarterback and go, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? None of us were there. None of us were at the exact scene or in her mindset or state of fear, or it was late at night. They're college students. I many a days back in that time, you may have been pretty drunk too. And
right.
You heard it. Okay, whatever. People come and go. You go to bed. There's many instances where this would make sense. It's not that it was the middle of the day. She has all of her wits about her. It's understandable, I think, in many ways to not go down the road of crucifying her. Let's talk about DNA for a moment and trying to get rid of evidence. There's been reports in one instance prior to Koberger's arrest, a neighbor claiming to have seen him wearing his surgical gloves outside, attempting to clean his car. Authorities observing him leaving his family home around 4 a.m. and putting trash bags in the neighbor's garbage bins, according to his source. With him doing this sort of thing, was that really an in vain attempt to try and clean things up, or was that that something that he had learned in his criminology classes that he believed he could actually make an impact at?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think this he may have learned this stuff. I mean, those things are what we call forensic countermeasures.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're trying to defeat, forensic collection of evidence. But he's doing such an amateurish job at it, right? I mean, I don't want to tip anybody off, but just to keep the vehicle. Well, first of all, just to drive the vehicle to the scene, knowing it's registered to you.
Yeah.
And then to keep the vehicle. We know. I mean, look, I wrote on a TV show called Criminal Minds, but you for four seasons, and there's a show CSI, and when you clean things, that the forensic people can still get in there. And I was part of a forensic team towards the end of my FBI career. There's no amount of cleaning you can do that can escape some of the new techniques that we have. There's a machine out there called the MVAC, which is really enhanced the ability to extract DNA in different places and different things that we never had before. It's a couple of years old, but it's an absolutely groundbreaking tool that can extract DNA from places and things that we never could extract it before. So there's always technology moving forward, and you can never get ahead of the technology. That's the problem. We're still human beings, and we have to act like human beings. We're not machines, and it's hard for us to actually outpace technology and outpace the machines. And so the machines that forensic scientists deploy to both collect and analyze this evidence is far ahead. And that's why, I think these were forensic countermeasures. I think he was consciously putting his trash out because he knows we do what's called a trash cover, mm-hmm. which means we collect your trash when you put it to the curb. It's considered abandoned property, but we know where it came from and we can testify to that. And then we take it back and we spread out a tarp and we dump it all out and we examine it. And, we go through it with a, fine tooth comb and we can get evidence of it. He knew that. So he dumped it in his neighbor's trash so it could be commingled, right? He wore gloves cleaning out his car because he was probably using very caustic cleaning fluid and cleaning material and didn't want that to get on his hands and stuff. And so, yeah, these are forensic countermeasures, but again, amateurish at very best.
Bobby Chacone, retired FBI special agent, thank you for joining us. We'll talk again with Bobby on Monday on other aspects of the case and other developments that have been coming out over the last couple of days to get his takes on that. Always interesting to hear from him. And that is where we're going to wrap up this edition of the podcast. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts to not miss any episodes or breaking updates as we have them for you. You can get a commercial-free experience if you subscribe through Apple Podcasts. That option is there for you as well. If you'd like to follow me on Twitter for more on this case off the air, you can follow me at Tony B Pod on Twitter. Until next time, for all of us at True Crime Today and the University of Idaho Murders Podcast, Four Killed for What? Thanks for listening.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Hurry! These July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Hurry! These July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Hurry! These July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to Ramp.com and love finance again.